All right. You guys doing all right today? All right. Cool. Hey, it's kind of nice sometimes when we can have just a very scaled back worship service. And I think it's great. I think it's really nice that we can kind of consider what God has done for us without the big sound every once in a while. So I hope you guys enjoyed that and have appreciated today so far. But hey, today is the last day in one of our sermon series here, Vision 2022, so I want to welcome you, especially if this is your first time. Thank you for joining us. Thanks for watching online if you're there. But hey, we're going to be finishing this Vision 2022 series up, and we've been talking about what makes us us as a church. That's really the whole point of this series. And we come together around four core values that we've been talking about over the last month. The first one, if you'll recall, is centering everything that we do on the gospel, which is the first and most important core value, because everything's built on that. The second is building authentic community with one another, which leads to then the third thing, demonstrating hospitality to our culture, bringing people into that authentic community with us. And then this week, we're talking about the fourth core value, multiplying disciples and mobilizing leaders. Multiplying disciples and mobilizing leaders. You can jot that down if you're taking notes, just so that you can remember our four core values, because this is us. This is who we are. This is why we exist as a church. These core values are our motives. They're our reason for being here. And multiplication is the way that we talk about growth. So this is the fourth thing that we're talking about. All of this kind of leads, you know, if it's founded on the gospel, then it leads to ultimately growth. But it's not just growth that we somehow produce on our own, right? We talked a little bit last week during the hospitality sermon about this. It's growth that the gospel produces in us as a church, not growth that we try to produce that's somehow fake. We can't force it. It has to come from the gospel. It's got to be that way. If we try to make it happen on our own, then it's going to lead to stagnation, ironically. It's not going to lead to growth. It's going to lead to insincerity and not authenticity. What's inauthenticity, right? That's the word. So if we center what we do on the gospel, then it will eventually lead to multiplication, but we got to get the order right. That's the only way it works. It's got to be real. Because this is what's turned off so many people to the church in our culture, hasn't it? This is it. This is one of the main reasons, if not the main reason, people walk away from the church. They think we're selling them something that they don't need or want. We're the used car salesman from last week. And all they see is our desire to grow bigger and better at their expense. And it makes people feel used because they crave the authenticity, right? That's what they crave. I was trying to think of a one-to-one here. I think this is a perfect example. I know you'll agree with me, okay? It reminds me of hipster coffee culture, okay? Hipster coffee culture. Because you know, hipsters and true hipsters, not just like, you know, fake yuppie hipsters, true hipsters who do all their own stuff, they love coffee, which means they hate Starbucks. Okay, if you're a true hipster and you're a true coffee culture person, you hate Starbucks because you do. It's not about the craft for Starbucks. And if you guys think it's about the craft for Starbucks, you're wrong. I just want to tell you that right now. They're all about the bottom line. I'm not saying that's bad either, but they're not about the craft. Okay, they're about the money. They're the Starbucks. They're all over the world now. But a hipster is about the craft, right? It's all about the craft. And if you're like one of our members, Jason Pelletier, who I didn't tell him this, so I'm just throwing you out there, Jason. He roasts his own coffee and does the whole deal. He sources the coffee himself. You can ask him where he gets it from. I'm sure he'll tell you all about it. He built his own coffee roaster machine. They built it. It's on a ply board, and he takes it outside and does the whole deal. Of course, then he grinds those beans and brews them in a pour-over style, right? Am I right there? Yeah, and of course, in the pour-over, there's a whole science to it. You don't want the water to be too hot or else it'll burn the beans, and you got to grind it to a certain size so that the crystals get, you know, it's all over the crystals so you can get the whole deal of the coffee crystals. It's got to be, you know, you got to bloom. You got to bloom the coffee for like 30 seconds to a minute before you keep pouring. So you do it, and it's very detailed. It's the craft, right? It's the craft. That's a real coffee maker. That's real coffee, isn't it? That ain't no Starbucks. And let me tell you, if you've ever had coffee in your life and you like coffee, that's the coffee that you've been looking for. It's not the Starbucks coffee, okay? You have been craving the authenticity of the craft brew of a hipster. And you didn't even realize it, probably. You don't even know that that's what you want. But it is. That's real coffee. And while that's meant to be a funny example, I hope it is, it's basically what people are craving from the church, and they don't even realize it. They want the authenticity. They're craving the authentic community that we've talked about. They're craving somebody to show them hospitality. They don't even know it, perhaps. But, you know, the church has been so institutionalized that they're rejecting the church like a hipster rejects Starbucks, okay? And I think that's a really good, helpful visualization for us today because the church has been so fake and mass-produced. That's why it's good to get back to just, I mean, we have a guitar and somebody's leading us in worship. That's beautiful. Like, we can do that. And it's awesome because we're here to worship God, not to get an experience, right? People don't want to feel used. I don't want to feel used. I don't want to feel like I'm a part of a machine. Biblical, gospel-centered, authentic Christian faith, it doesn't produce an institution. It produces a movement, you see. It produces multiplication. Multiplication is really just a code word for growth or for making disciples. It's another way to talk about the mission. And so there's no better place to talk about the mission that God has for every Christian than talking about the Great Commission. So we're going to be in Matthew chapter 28 today. If you want to turn there, find it on your device. It'll be up on the screens if you need it. But as you're doing that, I just want to ask some primer questions here for us to think about. Because we've been in a difficult season. We're still in a difficult season at some level. A lot of people are still having trouble with COVID and the pandemic. Hopefully we're on the tail end of it, but we're coming out of this season, perhaps. And a lot of people during this time, over the last 2 years, have really begun to deconstruct how they view the church, how they view Christianity. So for you, I want to ask some questions. How do you feel about your faith right now? How do you feel about it? How do you feel about Jesus? How do you feel about following Jesus right now? If you had to grade your spiritual health on a scale of 1 to 10, where would you be? 10 being the best, 1 being the worst. Where are you on that scale? If you just stopped and thought about your spiritual health and how you feel about the church or your faith right now, how do you feel about our church right now? What do you think? What are your assumptions? And especially to our launch team, the people who are church planters here and helped us launch the church. How do you feel about this hard season of church planting? Where are you right now? Because, see, a lot of people might be getting burned out or frustrated or apathetic or all of the above, perhaps. I don't know. And so many people over the last 2 years have had that happen in their faith. All across the United States, probably all across the world at some level, but certainly in our culture in America, many have left the church and haven't come back. Many have walked away from their faith. They haven't even realized it yet. They don't know that that's what they've done, but that's what they've done. And if we're not careful, we can find ourselves going into that place if we haven't already started to have some of those feelings ourselves. And the reason that I bring that up is because as we talk about multiplication today, I don't want to overspeak, but I actually think that's the answer to that problem that we might be facing with our spiritual health. That frustration or the apathy or the burnout that we might experience. Because, yeah, we need rest, and we talk about rest here a lot. We definitely need rest. It's part of the normal rhythms of a healthy life, a healthy Christian life, a healthy spiritual life. But you know what happens after you rest, right? You got to get back to work. You can't just rest, you know? Rest pushes you to live on mission. That's the work that God has for us. And so when you rest, it leads you to mission. You rest and then you live the mission out of that rest. And so I don't want to overspeak, but I really do believe that this is the remedy for most, if not all, of the problems that American Christians are facing is multiplication, the mission that we're on. But can't be fake. Cannot be a fake mission. Cannot be fake growth. Cannot be fake multiplication. That's what leads more to the burnout. It's got to be real. But man, when it's real, gospel-fueled growth. It's going to produce disciples who produce more disciples, who produce more disciples, and it's going to be beautiful. And that burnout, that frustration, that apathy, that's going to dissolve and fade away because, man, we're seeing God change literal lives, and it's going to be awesome. So if you're taking notes, let me give you the main point of the message, and then we'll dive into the text. Our main point is that every member is on mission, and people are the mission. Every member is on mission and people are the mission. And that's what our church is about. That's what all Christian gospel-centered churches should be about. This is the Great Commission in a nutshell. And we're going to break this down further. I'm going to break it into two parts today for us. That every member of God's family is on mission in this world. That's going to be the first part, right? That's the first section here. And the Great Commission is the Great Commission for each one of you and for me. It's our Great Commission. So we all have a part in fulfilling that, but it does mean that we share the gospel with people, right? We can never forget. It's not some abstract thing that we just do to check off the box of our Christian life. It's not just something that God is asking us to do just to be good people. or somehow please him to make ourselves right with him. That is not it. It's about people, because God cares about people and we ought to also care about people. We talked a lot about that in the hospitality sermon last week. We offer them a seat at the table that we ourselves have found ourselves at by grace. We're offering them a seat at the table, the joy that we found, the rest that we found. We want to lead restless people to the rest that we have ourselves. And so today, man, let's look at Matthew 28 and how that pushes us to see this. We're going to start in verse 16. We're just going to read this short section here, 16 to 20. And then we have these two big takeaways from the main point. So let's go ahead and read together. Here's what Jesus says, or what Matthew writes at the end of Jesus' life. Verse 16, the 11 disciples traveled to Galilee to the mountain where Jesus had directed them. And when they saw him, they worshiped, but some doubted. Now, we could talk a lot about that. I won't today. Very interesting that that's what's said. Some saw Jesus and they doubted, but anyway, like I said, that's a whole different sermon. Jesus came near and said to them, "All authority has been given to me in heaven and on earth. Go, therefore, and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit, teaching them to observe everything I have commanded you, and remember that I am with you always to the end of the age," or to the end of the world, or to the end of history, however you want to say that, whatever translation you're reading. This whole episode is at the very end of Matthew's gospel, and it's at the end of Jesus' ministry. Now, we looked at the beginning of Jesus' ministry back in the fall. You know, we looked at Matthew chapters 4 through 7, and then we went back at Christmas and looked at chapters 1 through 3. So we've done that, the beginning of Jesus' ministry, if you want to go back and listen to those. But this is the end of the very end, right before he goes away from the earth. He's getting ready to ascend into heaven with God to be at his right hand. Now, whatever that literally means, which we talk about here all the time, is a mystery. We don't fully understand what that exactly means. We know it's at least a metaphor. Being at the Father's right hand is a metaphor for being unified with God again. That's where Jesus is going. Whatever that looks like, he's going to be fully unified the way that he was before he was born into humanity. So he's going to go back to that, but in a different way now. He's become a human. That's you can't change that now. And so whatever this all means, he's going to be with God. And in these final moments, it's crucial for us to understand this is very important, because he's not going to be physically with humans again until he returns one day. And so these are his last words, like a last will and testament type of deal almost. It's very important. These are the words. We pay attention to these words. And so they get to the mountain where he's going to do this and he's going to leave. And then he says, all authority has been given to him everywhere for all time. So nothing that exists is not under his authority. In the universe, outside the universe, everywhere. That's what this means. It's an all-encompassing kind of phrase. And so that establishes our mission for us, he says. Because he's the supreme authority over everything, over all of reality, over all of history, therefore go and make disciples, right? So our mission comes out of his authority. And that leads to the first half of the main point that I want to dig into for a few minutes here. You can write this down, every member on mission, if you didn't write it down already, but that's the first heading that we're going to talk about. Every member is on mission. So this passage, to make disciples, that is the main verb of this particular passage. So when you look in at this paragraph and you read it, what's the point? He wants us to go and make disciples. That's the whole point. It's the main action word in this paragraph that Jesus communicates to his people. So this is the ultimate goal that he wants for his followers. Go and do this. That's our purpose now. Our purpose is to make disciples. That means if we've humbled ourselves and we've followed him and he's our supreme authority, he's our king, we've recognized the rest that he provides, then we've taken ourselves off of the throne of our hearts and we've put him on the throne. We've seen that he is the sovereign king that deserves that role in our lives, and we're going to listen to his marching orders. He's our king now. We do what he says. We take his mission and vision, and we make it our mission and vision, you see. So that's worth jotting down, too. Jesus' mission and vision is our mission and vision. His mission and vision for the world and all of humanity now becomes our mission and vision that we get to be a part of. And it's nothing less for him than world domination. I don't know if you usually hear it put that way, but that's certainly what's happening, right? It's world domination, just not normally how we hear it put in the world. I don't know if this is true or not, but I heard this in one of the sermons that I was listening to. I think it's really interesting. It's said that Napoleon Bonaparte, near the end of his life, wrote this to one of his friends, potentially General Henri Gatillon-Bertrand. And I think it's worth sharing, whether it's true or not, whether it's really him or not. This is what it said. And it's very profound if he said it and he believes it. "I know men, and I tell you that Jesus Christ is no mere man. Between him and every other person in the world, there is no possible term of comparison. Alexander, Caesar, Charlemagne, and I have founded empires. But on what did we rest the creation of our genius? Upon force. Jesus Christ founded his empire upon love. And at this hour, millions of men would die for him." Now, again, I don't know if the source is completely true, if it's really Napoleon or not, but if it is, it's very profound. It's profound either way, because it's true. It's a true statement. So you can write this down. Jesus is the king who came to die for his own people. So he conquers hearts with love, not with coercion and manipulation, right? His highest ethic is self-sacrifice, not self-aggrandizement, right? That's what Jesus is all about. And that's the essence of the good news that Christians believe. Jesus loved the world so much that he lived the perfect life that we all should live but don't. So he did that in our place. And then he died the death that we deserve for rebelling against God. Because see, we can't live the perfect life that Jesus lived. We're broken and rebellious. And yet he did all of that on our behalf and then died the death that we deserve. He took our place in that. And by his own power, he defeated death to become the king over all things, to ascend to his throne of the universe. And now we can defeat death when we're in him, when we believe in him. See, he rose from the dead so that we get to raise from the dead with him one day when he returns to renew and restore the universe. Man, it's a different kind of king and a better kind of kingdom. It's the kind of king and the kingdom that we're craving, you see. That's what we all want. Maybe we don't even know it. That's authentic. That's true. That's the true story of the whole world that we all can tell rings true when we hear that story. And now, because we believe that about Jesus and his authority, now we live on mission for him because of that story that we see ourselves as a part of. See, the gospel mobilizes us. And Jesus says our mission is making disciples of all nations, baptizing them, teaching them what he taught us. Another way to think about this is God's recreation mandate. That's how I like to talk about it, like to think about it. Because if you think about the original creation mandate, Genesis chapters 1 and 2, it's to be fruitful and multiply, right? Fill the earth, subdue it, all that kind of stuff. But what's be fruitful and multiply? Well, it's to reproduce. It's to have offspring, okay? That's what that means. And that's a commission to all humans. Now, what Jesus has given here is a recreation mandate. Now that we're a part of God's family, we're to be fruitful and spiritually multiply. The church, right? That's what this means. Because of what Jesus has done, we can be fruitful and multiply in a different way. We're reproducing spiritual offspring. And it's how we bear his image in the world now. You know? What's interesting about both of these mandates is that there is a command in it to follow, but then there's also something that just kind of happens. It's a decree over all of reality. You see, because right with the original one, the creation mandate, I'm sure that Christians might do it intentionally to glorify God, but nobody else in the world, when they have kids, stops and thinks about how God gave us a mandate to do this every time that we have physical relations with one another, right? Like, it just happens. That's part of human nature. I don't know if you've had the birds and the bees talk, but go and ask your parents about that if that's something you need to talk about, okay? It just happens. It's a decree that God has decreed over all of reality that occurs, and it's the same with the recreation mandate at some level. Yes, it's an intentional command we follow to go and make disciples. However, it just happens as well because God has decreed it to happen. It's a normal part of our new life in Christ now. Because of God's authority, he will accomplish his mission in the world, and he will do it through us, his church. And he's with us in that, even to the end of the age, the text says, and to the end of human history. Until history comes to a close, God is involved in making disciples through his church. So our mission is to make disciples now, because his vision is that every tribe, nation, and culture would be present on that day when history does come to a close. That's his vision for human history. That's his vision for each one of us, is that every tribe, nation, and culture would be present and represented there. And here's another observation about multiplication that I want you to consider as well. It unifies the church. Multiplication is part of the unity that we have. You know, you've heard the phrase, the family that plays together stays together. Well, that's what it is for us as a church. It doesn't rhyme when you say it like this, but it's true. The church is unified around God's mission, so the church that's on mission together stays together. So you can write it down that way. The church is unified around God's mission. That's one of the unifying factors for us, because listen, if we're all centered on the gospel, and that's ultimately what unifies us, then what does the gospel produce? It produces growth and multiplication, the mission. It leads us to the mission. So it's all part of the whole deal there in being gospel-centered. The mission is to make disciples, and that is now our purpose on earth. It's to grow the family. We're in the family, so we get to grow the family. And I've said it this way before, but Pastor Derwin Gray at Transformation Church out of Charlotte, he said that God leaves us on earth after we start following him for this very reason. It's for the sake of the mission. For no other reason. Why would he leave us here? He's left us here after we believe so that we can reach other people with the mission, so that we can share the gospel. And that's the mission that unifies us together. It's like a football team. If you think of it like a sports analogy, you know, I'm all into sports. And so I actually do know the rules to a lot of sports. Okay, I'm not an idiot, but not necessarily a sports fan. But what's helpful here is that they are moving down the field in football to do one thing, to score, right? That's what the gospel does for us. It moves us down the field in one direction. And now, as long as we're all moving in the same direction, we're going to try to score. And for us, scoring is multiplication. That's the mission that God has us on. That's the vision, is to get down to the end of the field and to bring everybody along with us. And that also means it's okay to disagree as well. I like to talk about this a lot, but we got to be a church that learns how to disagree with one another well, with one another, because then we're going to disagree with other Christians out there. But we're all moving in the same direction. If we're founded on the gospel, we're gospel-centered, yeah, we can disagree on a lot of theological things and still agree on the mission to reach people. And I think that's really important for us because, yes, we have our standards, we have our convictions, we have our beliefs, but man, there's a lot of things that we can hold open-handed if we simply center ourselves on the gospel first and recognize that it produces the mission in us. And I really love that, and I think that's what we need to be all about here in Roanoke. There are too many factions, not just in Roanoke, but in America, so divided. But man, we have so much in common when we're founded on the gospel. That's how we have community with one another. That's the authentic community. That's how we have hospitality. We bring people into our lives who don't look like us, right? They're not in the same life stage. They're not the same skin color or ethnicity. And yet, we can still have the deepest, most meaningful relationships with those people, even if we disagree on some things, even if we have different perspectives. And it's all because the gospel is the thing that unites us, and it leads us to the mission. We're all moving in the same direction. So, that's the first half. Let's talk about the second half now. People are the mission. People are the mission. It means God's after people. He loves people. He loves everybody everywhere. He wishes that none would go into eternity without knowing him, right? And so he sends us to reach those people as the messengers, to bring people to the table, to love and share the gospel with our neighbors. And I think the real question that comes up out of this then is the practical side of me goes, how do we do this? What does it look like to actually make disciples? What's it mean that it's all about people? So how's our church going to make disciples? Maybe more importantly, how do we do that without using people as a means to the end of church growth? That's what we need to keep in mind here, right? Because we got programs, we got strategy. I like laying all that. I'm very strategic minded. I'm a strategic thinker. However, it's about people. People are the mission. So we actually have to care about people. Not fake it, right? We actually have to learn to care. So how do we avoid faking it? Well, it starts by remembering that Jesus' vision is for people. That's where it starts anyway. We have to remember that it's about people. People are the mission. It isn't that we build bigger churches. That's not God's vision for us, or that we have cool programs, or even that we preach relevant sermons and, you know, have an awesome worship experience, which I hope we have all of those things. But that's not what it's about. Jesus' vision is that his people would share the gospel with the people that are in their lives, their neighbors, their coworkers, their friends, their students, all of these things, and that they would teach those people how to follow Jesus over the course of their life. That's it. That's really all it is. Talk about a fairly simple mission. It's one-minded, one direction. That's very, very simple. It's really not more complicated than that. And if you need a breakdown, this is what Paul wrote to Timothy in one of his final letters. He said this in 2 Timothy, "You therefore, my son, be strong in the grace that is in Christ Jesus. What you've heard from me in the presence of many witnesses, commit to faithful men who will be able to teach others also." That's it.
He calls Timothy his son because that means there's some kind of relationship, deep relationship. It's like his father in the faith kind of relationship. So it's very personal. And then he tells him to be strong in what? The grace of the gospel. We talked about that a few weeks ago, right? Be strong in the grace. That's the essence of the gospel. Be strong there, centered on that, and then pass that on to faithful people who will also then pass it on to others. Teach them all that Jesus has taught you. So you can see four generations there of Jesus followers, right? There's Paul, who talks to Timothy, who talks to other men, who can pass it on to other men. Very interesting here, very beautiful. And that's the lineage that we're all a part of. If we are in the family of faith, right? That's our family heritage now. We're a part of that because somebody shared it with us. Somebody passed it on to you, whether it was your parents or a family member or a friend or a neighbor or a coworker or an author in a book or somebody else. It doesn't matter. Somebody shared it with you and you believed it. And now you get to share it with other people and bring others into the faith. What Paul's saying to Timothy is that part of passing on the grace to others is passing on the culture of mission to others. Because not only are you sharing grace and showing grace and helping people understand the grace, but then you're also sharing it with other people so that they can see the grace and they can understand the grace. It's the whole package. It's literally sharing the gospel with people, and then for those who believe, it's teaching them all that Jesus has taught you so far in your life. That's pretty much it. But the Bible, we teach the Bible, but then also what we've learned in our own life. So that's a definition that we like to use a lot here at Redemption Church. You could write this down. Discipleship is both word taught and life caught. Very sticky, I know. I didn't come up with it, okay? It's teaching people how to read and understand the Bible because that's how we know God right now. We can see Jesus there and understand the grand narrative story of human history. But then it's also doing life with people and teaching them all that God has taught you so far. There's a lot of wisdom that comes up. We have to learn how to apply the Bible to our lives, and we can at least share with people what we've learned so far. But that brings up something important that I wanted to spend a few minutes talking about here as well, because I think there's a fundamental misunderstanding with American Christians about what it means to actually do church together. Okay? Because I think most American Christians today, even across denominational lines, doesn't matter where we land denominationally, they believe that church is an institution. It's a club that we are a part of where we make disciples as an institution. We have strategies. We do things. We do outreach. We do all of this stuff. But it's not something that they might need to do individually in their life. They're part of the collective, and so the collective takes care of it. The institution takes care of it, not them. And I've mentioned this guy before, but Will Mancini is a church consultant, author, great, great thinker, I think, right now that we need to listen to. His most recent book, Future Church, is one I would highly recommend to you. The way he describes the concept of church as an institution is by creating this diagram with an upper and a lower room, okay? And he calls the institutional church the lower room church. And I've got a diagram that you can see here. This is the lower room diagram, and I want to explain each one of these things to you because a lot of people will see the church as just this, and it's what holds the church together. It's one of these four things. It's either programs, personality, people, or place. And so let me quickly explain each of these. Programs are those things that a church has to offer to people, okay? These are usually called ministries, at least in our circle. So like for us, we do have programs, don't we? We have community groups. We have a new student ministry. We have kids ministry downstairs. These are programs that we offer. We probably offer a few others that we could pinpoint. But for church, it could be a homeless ministry. It could be their city outreach ministry. It could be their men's and women's ministries. It could be some program that people are attracted to, you see. And that's what people go to that church for, is because it's the program that feeds them, and they are really excited about that one thing. Could be some kind of, interpretive dance ministry. I don't know. It's a program that a church has. People are attracted to that. The second is personality. Personality is the person preaching every week. That's usually me up here for Redemption Church, right? So if you come to hear me preach and I'm the reason that you're here, I totally understand why. Okay. Yeah, I had to make the joke, right? I mean, it's... But that's a lower room church mentality, right? Because you come to hear me. I'm the reason that you're here. It's not for any other reason. It's because you love the sermons. They're super relevant. They speak to you, right? And so you come to church because, and the church grows because the person on stage every week is the one driving that. People is the next thing. And people is the idea that the church is all about the people in it. So it's about the country club mentality. You come to be seen. you come to know people, and usually it's because everybody looks like you and you feel comfortable there. And that's what it's all about when people is the driving factor behind church growth. And the last thing is place. Place is the actual location of the church. Now, for us, we don't understand that, because unless you love the, you know, the black curtains, dingy old building from the 60s vibe or whatever, 50s, 40s, I don't know when this was built, you're probably not here for the place. But a lot of people do that, right? They love the experience, the stained glass, the beauty of the architecture, or, man, they grew up in that church and it means something to them, or they got married in that church or something like that, and people go to a church because of the place. They stick in that because of the place. Maybe even the worship experience we could lump in there. It's awesome, fantastic, fog machines, all that kind of stuff, right? It's the place. And in all four of these cases, you'll see that these things aren't necessarily bad, right? Like, we're going to have all of these things. We have to have a place to gather to worship, and we have to have authentic, real community with one another, and we have to have good preaching that is gospel-centered, and we have to have programs that help structure what we do as a church. But the problem is when those things take over and that's what people are attracted to, and it's very self-centered, not mission-centered, right? Because in every one of those cases, if somebody's attracted to a church, it's because it's how it applies to them, not how they can be a part of the mission, you see. So the problem is when those things take over and that's what people are attracted to, because these are the institution. This is what it means to be an institution, these four things, just in general categories. But there is the upper room, and I think this is what Mancini is on to here, so let me show you that. The upper room is nothing less than Jesus' mission and vision for his church, but in a contextualized way, you see. His mission and vision is to make disciples of all nations through us, as we've talked about. And the way that we've contextualized that here is to say that we live to lead a restless culture to the redeeming Savior in Roanoke. That's our mission here. That's how we are making disciples, you see. And our vision is to send people back down the mountain. That's how I talk about it all the time. I won't explain it here, but it's basically to mobilize our members, you, to live on mission and to lead others back to Jesus in our city, but around the world. That's our vision for our church. That's the upper room church mentality. And it's what the lower room should exist for. So the way Mancini puts it is we have to make sure to build a staircase. So if we put both of these two things together with an upper and lower room, this is the kind of church that we're going to be. We are going to have those institutional-like type of things. But the institution exists to make sure that we are fulfilling the mission and the vision. The mission and vision is what we center ourselves around. That's the important thing here. So the preaching is to equip and build up people for the mission. The programs exist to perpetuate the mission. People are in community with one another to bring people into the mission. And the place is ultimately for the sake of the mission, right? So Mancini uses the language of vision and provision here. You can see on that diagram, the upper room is the vision that we all share. That's what we center ourselves on. That's why we have fellowship. That's why we do church together. And then the provision for getting that done is the lower room stuff, okay? Which means that, man, the lower room stuff is important, but it's not that important. So I want you to write it down like this if you're taking notes. The institutional church supports the missional church. The institutional church supports the missional church. If we just have a lower room mentality, then no wonder people are walking away from the church in droves. Who wants to build up an institution that they don't even understand how they fit into? Because it's about things that aren't ultimately the end goal. That becomes the focus. It'll boil down to preferences, and it'll boil down to things that you don't understand instead of the mission. That's what causes burnout and frustration and apathy and people to walk away. It's because they don't get it, and I don't either. I don't like that. I'm a millennial. Everything has to be authentic, okay? That's how our generation tends to roll right now, and maybe the younger generations too, I hope. Because I think that, you know, there are a lot of brokenness in millennials, but that's at least one good thing about millennials that you could say. We like to be authentic. And we're still over here trying to support an institution in the United States, and it's not relevant at all. And it's going to run us into the ground. And it's going to lead to apathy and burnout and frustration if that's how we're thinking about church. But see, the end goal is the mission. And what's the mission? People. People are the mission, right? It's not the institution. The end goal is to bring every tribe, nation, and culture together to worship in God's family for all of eternity. That's the beautiful vision that we can have of the future. And the structured part of the church is what can help support that, you see. And so, guys, that means for us, we don't cater to the programs that we have. They could change at any time if we need to change them. That means that I'm not going to stand up here and preach a self-help sermon that makes you feel good about yourself when you leave most of the time. Hopefully you do. Hopefully you feel good, though, because of the gospel, not because I'm trying to, you know, manipulate you into thinking a certain way or saying a certain way. It means that we're not going to be a country club to make you feel safe around people who look just like you, right? And it means that the place that we ultimately meet is irrelevant, as long as we can meet together. I mean, look at where we're meeting right now, right? It's great, but, I mean, who cares? At the end of the day, we have the lower room stuff, but it's not about those things. I don't want to fuel an institution. I want the institution to fuel me as I live on mission, you see. That's how we need to think about it. We get it backwards all the time, but when we do that, we will burn out and we will lose our way and we will stop going in the same direction together, and it leads to discouragement. But listen, if we get going in the right direction, we can stay founded on the gospel. We understand these four core values that we've talked about over the last month. Man, we're going to get going in the right direction, and there's going to be excitement and encouragement, even when it gets hard for us. Guys, we're going into a culture that's harder and harder for Christians in the United States, and I'm not trying to be all weird about that, but I mean, you can just see that over the last 5 years, and that's okay, because that's going to lead to mission. That's going to lead to growth and multiplication, and I want to be ready for that, because that's exciting. That's our purpose. We're going to see life change in other people, especially as we pour ourselves out to make disciples. And all that structured stuff that we have in the lower room, man, it's meant to encourage and support and lead to organic growth. So I'm going to say the same thing again in a different way. You can write it down this way. The structure supports the growth. It doesn't cause it. The structure supports the growth. It doesn't cause it. And I want to nail down on this so that we understand. You can think of it like a grapevine on a trellis. I think this is a very good visual. A trellis is one of those structures that enables a vine to grow up on it, right? Like a grapevine. And usually, the grapevine needs a structure in order to thrive and produce fruit. It's not like squash, you know, or pumpkins. You see, they grow on the ground on a vine. That's okay. They have thick skin. They could do that. That's what they're built for. But with a grape, that's not possible. The grape has to have a structure because the thin is so skin. The skin is so thin that it'll rot. Insects and animals will get to it very easily. So you grow it up on a trellis or on a structure so that it can produce good fruit. Now you have to prune it. There's got to be all kinds of stuff. It's a little testy. You got to do that. Not like I'm a gardener over here, but I read about this, okay? So I am able to read and see that that's the case. And so you have to have the structure in order to produce the fruit. And what I think is really cool about a grapevine at some level is that it can take up to 3 years to produce fruit. After you've pruned it and tended to it and grown up on this structure, it takes time, in other words. And you know, God uses the idea of a vine, a grapevine, for his people, Israel, in Isaiah. And Jesus uses it in John chapter 15. We talked about that last year as a launch team before we even launched the church. So God likens us to grapevines already, and it's probably because we're a little needy and we're a little testy. We need to be pruned some in order to produce fruit, but we got to have a structure for that sometimes, right? We got to have the structure on which we can grow so that we will produce fruit, and that's what the church can provide for us. It's a background structure, right? So it's not the growth. It's not the end of goal for the growth. It's the thing that allows the growth, that we can grow up and produce fruit and live on mission. That's what the structure should do for us. So it can provide at least some structure in our life as a Christian to go to church and to be a part of the church. And finally, when God's pruned and matured us enough, we will begin to produce fruit, which is multiplication. And guys, we'll start dropping gospel seeds all over the place. And that's the beauty of where we are going together as a church. Here in our city, around the world, we're going to see God change people's lives. And so let me go ahead and give you the visionary goal as we kind of wind our time down here today. The visionary goal that I've tried to lay out for you at least 3 weeks now, right? What's the visionary goal for this last core value of multiplication? Well, these are our marching orders, the Great Commission, as we've talked about. This is how we're going to make disciples here in Roanoke. By sharing the gospel, by loving people, hospitality, right? We've talked about all of that over the last 4 weeks, but it starts with being gospel-centered. So hopefully you've committed to read the Bible through in a year, at least try to. Hopefully you've done that. If you haven't, man, do that. Don't wait. That's part of being gospel-centered in your own life. But then, hopefully, you've also committed to rearrange your schedule last week to make time to invite people into your life, whatever that looks like for you at whatever life stage you're at. Make time to invite people in and show hospitality. And then this week, the vision is to ultimately multiply disciples and mobilize every member to live on mission for us. But it starts with considering one person in your life who needs Jesus. And that's going to be the goal. I know it's a little nebulous, so I want to explain it, but you can write it down. Consider one person on a daily or weekly basis who needs Jesus. Remember we talked about considering people last week? Consider one person in your life right now. One person who doesn't know Jesus that you know, that you love, that you really care about. Make sure you're in close enough relationship with them that you have contact on a daily or maybe a weekly basis. This is just general wisdom. I'm not saying it has to be this way, but general wisdom would say somebody who's the same gender probably. Maybe not necessarily the same life stage. I don't know. But somebody that you can start praying for right now. Somebody that you can just pray for on a daily or weekly basis. Somebody that you know doesn't know Jesus, and you need to share the gospel with them. Somebody that you can ask God to be bold in your heart for so that you can bring them to the table with you. So that's what you need to do. Ask God for wisdom and boldness. Somebody who needs resources, if this is what you're like me and you like to have the charts and the one-pagers and all the resources to help you, I've got a website for you. You can write this down, whosyourone.com. Go to whosyourone.com. Look at all the stuff that they have there. They have tons of stories, resources to help you pray, resources to help you think about how you could share the gospel. Remember, I've told you this before with William Wilberforce. He's the guy that, you know, the movie Amazing Grace is about. He's the guy that helped basically single-handedly stopped the slave trade in the United Kingdom back in the late 1700s, early 1800s. Yeah, he would go and pray for people and write their names down in a notebook after he had talked to them in Parliament and stuff. And he would write their names down and think of ways to bring up the gospel in the next conversation that they had. That's a level of intentionality that we should have if we really care about people, if we really love them. We talk about this with our kids all the time. We read books on how to do our jobs. We read books on how to make sure we make it through school. Oftentimes, people don't even think about raising their kids, which is like the most important thing that you could do as a parent in the world. And so you need to study and learn and understand how to do this kind of thing. It's the same with the mission. If you care about the mission, if it's your purpose in life, man, learn how to do it. Learn how to get better at it. Practice. Practice with one another. Practice with people who you care about and who you know. That's how we're going to learn to love people well. And whether you need the resources of the Hoosier One or not, man, just start to think about how your life needs to change and start to think about how other people's lives could change. Think about your one. How could their life, but start to dream for them. What's the vision for their life if they come to know Jesus because you're in their life? Man, just think about how multiplication works. If there are 60 people here and we all share the gospel with one person by the end of this year, that's 120 people. That's how many seats we actually have in this room. We have 120 seats set out right now. This room holds up to 360-some seats. So imagine if you share the gospel with one person and there's 120 people here that get saved if everybody responds and believes and they come to church. Imagine what happens then if everybody doubles that, and we all start to get one more people, 120 now, share the gospel with people around them for a year and pray for them and involve themselves in their lives. What's math? 120 times two. 600. There you go. I like the way you think. 600. I like it. Yeah, I mean, see, that's multiplication. But we can't think about fake multiplication. As soon as we start to be fake about it, it's worthless. But if we really start to love people and we show a level of intentionality and we start to really live our lives in the way that we say that we believe, man, it's going to pay super incredible dividends that we can't even fathom right now. So I want you to think about this. Think about multiplication as I kind of come to a close here. If you have a young family like I do, just imagine that you meet another young family at school with your kids or in a sport that you guys are in, extracurricular activity, whatever it is. And imagine that you start talking to one of the parents that's in this family, and you quickly realize that they have a terrible relationship with their spouse, and it comes out as you dig deeper that, man, they're on the brink of divorce. They're about to separate. They don't know what's going to happen. Can you believe? I'm not saying he will. I'm just saying, can you believe that God could use you and your family to bring them back from the brink of that divorce. Because I'll tell you what, I've seen it happen over and over and over again in the church that sent us here. But we've seen that happen here. There were marriages that were on the brink of divorce and they have come back. That is so beautiful that that's occurred here. Do you believe God could use you to do that in somebody's life? He can. Do you believe it? Or if you're a student or a grad student here in a program in the Valley, just imagine meeting one of your classmates or professor or somebody else that you kind of rub elbows with on a regular basis, and you quickly realize as you get to know them that they're anxious about everything. Man, they're struggling with depression over things. They're struggling to see their purpose and direction in life. They're restless, if we could say it that way, right? Man, do you believe that God could use you to show them that he actually has a purpose for their lives and they can live with joy? Do you believe that he could use you to do that? Because he can. We've actually seen that occur here at Redemption Church. We've seen people, students, come out of that kind of thinking because somebody shared the gospel with them and they came here and they got around community and they realized what their true purpose is. God could use you to do that in somebody's life. Do you believe it? And maybe one more example here. If you're a young professional or a medical professional in the industry here, man, it's a very unhealthy industry in a lot of ways, isn't it? Yeah. Well, I've just talked to basically all the people that I know in the medical industry realize it's very difficult. It's very hard in a lot of ways. Can you imagine God using you to share the gospel with people who have the power to change the culture of the medical industry here in Roanoke? And that over time, that medical industry actually transforms to become one of the healthiest places, not just for patient care in the United States, but also work culture for those who are actually working in the industry. That could occur here. Now, we haven't seen that happen yet. That's one thing we haven't seen happen, but it could. Do you believe that God could use you to do that here in Roanoke? He can. Do you believe it? I mean, the goal for us isn't something crazy here. I'm not asking us to share the gospel with 20 people this year, right? I'm not even asking you to share the gospel with 2 people. I'm asking you to think of one person that you can share the gospel, that you can pray for, that you can start to think intentionally with. One person. So who's your one? Who's your one going to be? Because, man, what if God saved that one person that you're starting to think of right now? And what if they were one of the baptisms that we see this year? We had 7 baptisms last year. It's incredible as a new church that we saw 7 baptisms. I can't get over that. What if we saw 14 this year? Because they all shared the gospel with somebody, shared how God has changed their life, and we see 14 people get baptized this year because of that. I don't know. I mean, I'm just saying. I'm starting to dream a little bit here, right? Because, listen, all cards on the table, my prayer is that our church will grow numerically. I want us to get to 100 people by the end of the year. You know, I mean, it's a number. It's arbitrary. I prayed that for the end of last year. God said no, right? Like, that didn't happen. And that's totally okay. But the reason I set that up for us is because we are an upper room church. And so what's going to happen is that our mission, if we're gospel-centered, then our mission will lead to growth. It just will. It just will happen that way. And so I'm praying for all 100 of those people, because if it's just about the number, then it's fake. But if we remember that those 100 people are actual people with stories, with situations where God has entered in and transformed, they've overcome addiction, they've come out of a nasty abuse situation, they've had a reconciled marriage, they were on the brink of committing suicide, and God brought them back. Whatever it is, those are stories that we want to see here. And guys, if it's going to be fake, I don't want it. And I know you feel the same way. But guys, if it's real, because we are centering our lives on the gospel, and it's leading to natural multiplication, for us to care for people and to bring them in and to share the gospel with them, bring them to the table that we ourselves didn't deserve to be brought to, then God's going to do more than we could ever ask, think, or imagine here. And I hope that's the kind of church we'll be. Let's pray that it will. Let me pray. God, thank you so much for what you have done in our church already. The 7 baptisms, I just cannot get over. And God, I hope we don't. I hope we don't get over that. Those are 7 lives that have been changed by your gospel. There's 7 people that are living on mission for you. They're not perfect. They make mistakes. We all do. We're all broken still. And yet you still love them enough to enter into their situation in a supernatural way. And God, we pray that you will start to do that all over the valley, because we're here. Now, I want to pray for the other churches in the valley, and I pray for the Gospel Center churches, God. I pray that you'll use them to the same end. But God, I pray for us. I pray that we would take our, we have a little slice of the pie here if we think about it that way. And God, I just pray that you'll use us for our little slice to reach the people around us. God, I pray that you'll help us to be intentional to love people and care for them. I pray that you'll help us to be bold and intentional to share the gospel with those that we know we actually need to be sharing the gospel with if we really care for them. So God, I pray for our church. I pray that we will commit to do that. And I pray, God, that it won't be fake. Because if it is, please, please just shut it down, God. I really hope that I mean that with my whole heart. But God, please don't let it be fake. Let us see real produced fruit here. Let us see real life change in people, as we've already started to see, which gives me great hope for the future to see what you're going to do this year in 2022. So God, help us to be committed to the vision and mission that Jesus has for us. Help our institutional things that really don't matter at the end of the day to support those things, though, so that we can be healthy and we can produce fruit. And God, I just pray that you'll get all the glory for it. You deserve the glory. Help us to worship you with our whole hearts now as we respond to this. In Jesus' name. Thanks so much for listening with us today. We hope that it was an encouragement to you. But you know, we don't see this as a replacement for gathering with other believers in a local church context. So if you don't have a local church, we would encourage you to plug in with one wherever you are. And if you're in Roanoke, Virginia, we'd love to invite you to plug in with us here at Redemption Church. And you're welcome anytime to gather with us. But you can check us out online at our website, redemptionroanoke.com. You can look for other content or resources there. But thanks again for listening.